Hi, friends. Welcome to Bayou to Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today we're having a conversation with Jackie Lyle, who is the founder of PASA, Performing Arts Serving Acadia Ana, and perhaps familiar to many people who are from Acadia Ana. Ms. Lyle was born in Oberlin. She moved to Lafayette when she was seven, attended high school at Como, went to LSU for college, came back to Lafayette, and got mixed up with the Times of Acadia Ana as it was kicking off, had a number of positions there, including sales, advertising, and had her very own column, before leaving, sort of, to start PASA in 1989. Well, she is back at it, and so we wanted to have her on the show today and talk about the reemergence of PASA and exactly what it means for Acadia Ana. Welcome to the show, Ms. Jackie.
Thanks, Pearson.
Tell me, how did PASA come to be originally?
Lafayette, they'll remember the Fine Arts Foundation. The Fine Arts Foundation thrived here for 13 years. And when the Hyman Center, which was the municipal auditorium, closed for renovation, the organization didn't really have the ability to sell tickets. And that was also at the point where the oil and gas industry was at its lowest point. And the Fine Arts Foundation ended up filing bankruptcy. And I was a young mom with kids 1, 3, and 5 years old. I had grown up going to performances. And I mean, for our family, we went to sporting events and we went to performances. And I was thinking, well, what's there going to be to bring my children to? And so as the Fine Arts Foundation board was trying to find its way, I got involved and with a group that was looking toward the future and ended up joining the board and then going to work part-time as the executive director. You know, in my previous two positions, both at the Times and with Clairol, I had great sales training and a good deal of marketing knowledge and just a passion for performing arts. I grew up dancing, playing piano, saxophone, flute, and I just felt like it was something I could do. Fairly arrogant, but you know, mindset. But I left the Times and went after PASA, and you know, it was a transformation of certainly my life. It had huge impact on my family's life, and it had a huger impact on our community.
Let me ask a little bit about that. So the Fine Arts Foundation basically entered bankruptcy, and then you kind of, as they more or less fell apart, you kind of seized their banner and kind of reshaped it. Was this a generational change as well at that point?
It was generational in that if you look at it from an economic standpoint, you know, it was a generational standpoint in our economy, but it was not a change from what the Fine Arts Foundation did. You know, and under that organization, some of the best performers in the world came to Lafayette, and when we started PASA, that's what we were doing. Is a great soprano. Dawn Upshaw had just won her first Grammy Award, or actually booked her before she won her first Grammy Award, and she went on to be a huge star. And, you know, over the course of the 22 years that I led PASA, we had virtually every major dance company in America perform here. We had big stars like Itzhak Perlman, the great violinist, Tony Bennett, who needs really no introduction to almost anybody. We had great drama, you know, dramatic performances, not drama on stage, but dramatic performances.
There's probably some drama, too, I would imagine. But,
there was, and we also, it was a time when there was touring opera. So we had the annual tour of the New York City Opera National Company every year. And, you know, that was huge for us. And people are always surprised to know that we could count on opera to sell out.
Well, let's follow that up. So, you know, this is a fairly eclectic program you're talking here of so there's dance, there's classical music, there's jazz, there's drama, there's opera. Mm-hmm. What do audiences respond to? Was there a particular formula or just a little of this and a little of that?
Well, for many people to be able to see professional dance on an annual basis, and we wished it could have been more than annually, was big. Our biggest challenge was to take a brand, to take the name of an artist or an ensemble that did not carry a brand like a Tony Bennett or an Itzhak Perlman, and build the brand. And I have to credit the ownership and leadership of the Times of Acadiana in the 80s and the 90s for helping us do that, because they donated a full-page ad each of the 4 weeks before every performance, helping us fulfill what we needed to do to sell tickets, and that was to build every artist into a brand. And, you know, so that's how it happened. We were, you know, very small staff, but as we grew in our aspirations and grew in our program components, we were able to add more staff. And I have to say also, we did a lot of work for the Louisiana Division of the Arts, which helped fund our ability to bring on new staff. So we grew the organization through not box office sales and not sponsorship so much, as we were able to grow our staff infrastructure by selling our services to others.
What do you mean by selling your services to others?
Well, when we had contracts with the state for which they paid us to do work that was also relative to our programming, but to do the work in statewide work.
Hmm. Interesting. So, you know, what do you think led to the success of PASA during those years, and why did you move on, and what has happened since?
I think the success of PASA was built on our development of programs. You know, the first time we had the New York City Opera National Company come in, the company lost its next date in Biloxi 90 days before the tour began, and they called and said, could you take us for an extra day? And what they really meant was, can you take us for an extra day and pay us $15,000 more? And so my question was, and what would I do with you? And they said, well, how about an educational performance? And I ran the numbers, and I said, well, how about two? So we had two, and we had 3,200 students attend a fully staged opera with an orchestra. Just suddenly, you know, we didn't plan it, we didn't anticipate it, but we were able to make it work. Our board said, if you can raise an additional $15,000, do it, and I was able to do that quickly. And then as teachers were leaving, they said, well, what's next? I'm not sure, but we'll get back to you. And so that started our daytime performance for students series, which was wildly successful. You know, it enriched our grant applications, brought us more money in that way, and also helped us learn how to educate people who are coming to see something new.
If you just tuned in, we are talking to Jackie Lyle, who is the executive director of PASA, Performing Arts Serving Acadiana, today and in its reincarnation. And we're talking about some of the successes of PASA in the past. This all sounds fantastic, but at some point, what PASA is today is a reemergence or a new organization. What happened that prompted this reemergence? Did you step away from the organization? Did the organization change and now you're restarting it? So what's that about?
After 22 years or after 21 years, I was not well, and my family needed more attention than I could give leading the organization. And I always thought that there would come a day when somebody else would have some better ideas than me, and I felt like the time had come and I asked to be replaced. And as things rolled forward, I was replaced, and the organization struggled and merged in a way with the Acadiana Center for the Arts, and that programming that PASA was known for dwindled to the point where we could effectively say it doesn't exist. And, you know, and I don't say that with animosity or faulting anyone. This industry is very hard to pursue. It's very risky, and it's very expensive. You know, when I left PASA, our annual budget was somewhere around $900,000. That's a big chunk for someone else to take on to do. And so, you know, I continued to work in the industry for others. I consulted with dance companies. I launched a new production here in Lafayette for the Apollo Theater, which is located in Harlem in New York. I did some work for the Loyola School of Music and developed a new program for them, but continued to want to have great performances here to go to that were classical music, that were dance, big dance. And so others who had been on the board with PASA and I started an organization, and we called it Upstage. We changed the name in 2019 to Performing Arts Serving Acadiana PASA. So there's a difference in our full name, which really reflects our vision. Our vision is Performing Arts Serving Acadiana.
So as I understand it, you know, once the ACA took over, there was a decline in some of the type of events that PASA had really been known for, signature events, and so you thought it would be good to reorganize it and perhaps get some new people involved and kick it back up again. And so now you've made some progress on that. And as I'm looking at your brochure, I'm saying you have a season that is coming up. So what's PASA planning for Acadiana coming up?
Well, on October 21st, we have the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra. You know, New Orleans Jazz Orchestra is our primary musical ensemble that tours. And we have them coming in. They'll be doing some extra work in the community in addition to that performance on the 21st. And then in December, we have Postmodern Jukebox, which is wildly popular right now. And then in January, we have Black Angels Over Tuskegee, a drama, of course, about the Tuskegee Airmen. And in each of those instances, our goal is to attract an audience that is there to be entertained. And in the case of Black Angels Over Tuskegee, is there to embrace a story that's relevant to our history and to learn more about it. Our New Orleans Jazz Orchestra performance is really tied to a visionary project that we have on the books. I approached the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra and Cleo Parker Robinson Dance Company in Denver and asked them to work together to create a new dance piece that would reflect on acts of violence against houses of worship and redemption. So we're in the midst of that right now, looking forward to that performance perhaps in 2023. And our goal is, as COVID restrictions are lifted, to be able to do daytime performances for students. Again, we focused on junior high and high school level because those are the students least served in that sort of enrichment area. And we know how important it is when, you know, when you're sitting in the Hyman Center and you're watching kids leave from a performance of To Kill a Mockingbird and you hear a kid say, "Well, now I understand what that book was about." Suddenly, the theater becomes an alternative classroom. And it's alternative classroom for the academic world that our schools are to be pursuing, and it also becomes a classroom for cultural literacy, both of which are very important.
Now, you mentioned a couple of things that I wanted to follow up on. Now, originally there was another show that you had scheduled, Momix, to do Alice. And
right.
And that would be more of a dance show. So the shows that you have scheduled, I guess, are going to be a couple of them are music and one drama.
Right.
What impact has COVID had on your rollout this year, and how are you trying to put on live music and live entertainment in the COVID era?
Well, COVID, really had an impact more than a year ago because it canceled our 2021 season, which was to be our very first. And then we were opening this season with Momix performing Alice, their version of Alice in Wonderland. And at the point where they really had to decide if they were coming here due to COVID was a day when Lafayette was making lots of national news about opposition to vaccines. And the company had to balance out whether they would come to Lafayette for one night and risk 3 weeks in Paris, or whether they would skip Lafayette and come back at a later date. And I was supportive of whatever their decision was, and they chose to schedule us for a later date. We haven't gotten that done yet, but Momix will be back. We've had them here twice before. They're just an unbelievable group of thinkers and innovators and entertainers, so they'll be back.
Now, there are lots of people who've heard of PASA before and who have attended shows. Does that make starting at this time or restarting at this time a little easier than initially it was?
Yes and no. One of the big changes that we've made, in every business, and this is a business, in every business you have to look at the model that you've always followed and make some decisions about whether your model is still an effective way of doing business. And one thing that we've done is we've dropped a subscription where you order all your tickets and you get a packet of tickets. Our tickets are all available on sale for all shows right now, and that's a big difference. And for me, who has spent so many years, actually decades, with a subscription base as sort of some financial insurance, this is a little unnerving for me, and I have to remind myself every day, it's a new world, and we're doing something different. And our expectations and our timelines have to look different as well.
What changed that made the subscription or series ticket less viable?
Historically and around the world, subscriptions are dwindling. People buying season tickets, and in order to market a season ticket, you have to put some dollars behind that. And I really felt like our dollars were better spent marketing each show than marketing a subscription. In the days at the previous PASA, we had a team of telemarketers who made phone calls. We produced an expensive brochure. We mailed it out. We guaranteed people seats for every show. And, you can, once you buy your ticket, it is guaranteed today. But we ended up with a lot of holes in the orchestra. Some people bought subscriptions to be supportive and didn't come. Some people bought subscriptions and only came to the shows that they wanted. And then that left people who wanted to sit in our prime real estate, the orchestra section, unable to buy a ticket there. And so without a subscription, all seating areas are open to all people. And frankly, Pearson, when we had a black artist on stage, the majority of our ticket buyers who were not subscribers and who were not Caucasian ended up having to sit in the last rows downstairs and in the balcony. And that reality of what that looked like for the audience and what that looked like for the artist on stage is just untenable for me. And this change is going to make a change in that. Now, that said, in 2019, we brought in Ailey 2, the second company of Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. We didn't have a subscription. We just put those tickets on sale. And so we know that we can do that without a subscription base. So we didn't rush into this blindly. We rushed in with some information and actual practical experience. And then there are other organizations in my big colleague group around four states who have decided to do something similar. And if you look at what the Metropolitan Opera is doing and their philosophy about subscribers, it's changing there too.
Interesting. I wanted to ask a question. So are the venue for these shows that you're doing the Hyman Center?
We are doing all of these shows at the Hyman Center. You know, we had tested the waters of doing a show in the 530-seat theater at Lafayette Middle School, but we had to stop that because of COVID. But, you know, there are a couple of other venues in the city that are available, and we hope to be able to figure out programming for those. And, you know, also one of the early things that we started was a comfy couch concert in my home where I can seat about 85 people. I have a good grand piano. And then with COVID, I wasn't going to have anybody coming to my comfy couch. So that's when we changed our programming of local artists to Pasa in Your Casa, a virtual program. We also have the basis for a mobile stage now, so we can bring artists just out into neighborhoods.
So kind of a traveling Pasa. That's quite interesting.
Right. Well, and also, you know, to be able to give artists work and to make it worth their while to put together a show is very important to our local economy, especially, you know, the economy of the musical community.
That's absolutely right. Now, listen, a couple of questions here. How can people find out about upcoming shows and pick up some of those tickets?
The tickets are all available on Ticketmaster. Can truck down to the Hyman Center, or you can go online to PASA's website, pasaonline.org, and all the links are right there. Our Facebook page is very active with lots of information, not just about our activities, but about the activities of some of our performing arts friends. And so, you know, for people to head over to Performing Arts Serving Acadiana on Facebook and like and follow that page is a great, great source of information too.
When you look ahead and you think to yourself, what would you like PASA to accomplish looking to the future?
I really believe in two visionary projects that we have, the one with Cleo Parker Robinson and the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra, reflecting on acts of violence against houses of worship. And then the other is a project with the artist Elizabeth Streb, which will take place in Blackham Coliseum if our vision comes to fruition, that reflects on the history of Blackham Coliseum and its association with risk, particularly the history of Burl Shipley's 1966 to 1972 basketball team. And we want to get students back into the Hyman Center. It's amazing the number of people who are growing up never having been to a show at the Hyman Center unless they went to a dance recital. To help more and more people understand that this industry is viable, that it's a career opportunity, and that without the reemergence of the cultural economy, our general economy is not going to reach its potential.
Well, one thing that Louisiana has going for it as we enter the final minute of our talk today is the cultural economy. So you see this as part of the broader cultural economy in the Acadiana area?
Oh, absolutely. We employ 1099 stagehands. We employ musicians. We use so many goods and services that don't have anything to do with the cultural economy, but have to do with running our business, because this is a business that relies on goods and services.
And the goods and the services you provide are entertainment for people in the Acadiana area. We're coming to the end of our interview. We've been talking today with Jackie Lyle, who is the founder and, I guess, executive director of Performing Arts Serving Acadiana. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Jackie, and tell us about this exciting new season that's coming up. I certainly encourage everyone to go to the websites that you mentioned and check it out. Think about whether or not some of these performances might be right for you.
They're all right for you.
They're all right
because
for you.
Because you know when PASA presents it, you know it's great.
You know it's great. Well, we're going to close with that statement. Thanks for being on our show today.
Thank you so much.
Bayou de Bellway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org. krvs.org.
Hi, y'all. I'm John Shopwe. Colleen and I have been listening to KRVS for more than four decades. We wake up to Bonjour Louisiane, are informed by the reporting on Morning Edition. The interviews of Terry Gross are a breath of fresh air. KRVS is our daily dose of continuing education. In a community with a rich and vibrant heritage and culture, KRVS is a driving force for its preservation and enhancement. Merci bien, KRVS. Please join Colleen and me and support KRVS at krvs.org.
Next time on Hearts of Space, an Indian summer journey for Native American cedar flute. Music is by Ann Lacater, Coyote Old Man, Scott August, Mysteries of the Night, and more. I'm Stephen Hill, a program called Twilight Earth 4 on the next Hearts of Space.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Support comes from The Vermilion, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette.